I'm nervous now to like try and carry a conversation for another like 40, 50 minutes. Like,
no.
I don't want to repeat myself and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah.
It'll be separated by a week, so.
Yeah.
It'll be fine even if
I was
we
so,
repeat like, ourselves.
Ready. I was like, oh no, this works perfect. And then it's like, does it? Like, I don't want to.
Well, we could do another topic if you want.
I don't know if anyone would be. Oh, we can do this one. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can just
we'll give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a fair effort and see where it goes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Hopefully we can get at least like 40.
Yeah, yeah. Weekend rental!
Yeah!
I'm going to use that as our intro.
F for flawless. That nailed.
F for flawless.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome back to the Weekend Rental Podcast, everyone. My name is Greg, joined again by Jeremy. We got a spicy topic today.
Oh.
So, with the retro video game market, stuff's been going down, you know. People talk about this happening all the time. Can the retro video game market crash? Hmm. Can it crash? If it can, what would a crash look like? How could it happen? Why couldn't it happen, if it could or couldn't? Because, I mean, at this point now, we're moving towards an all-digital future. That's coming. It's
yeah.
inevitable.
Yeah.
In doing that, I mean, say, I don't know, maybe near term, 5-10 years, is everything just going to go to zero? What's the future for retro gaming, for physical games, going to look like? Can we crash?
Hmm. Oh, that's a big one. Well, you know, I will start off by saying it continually surprises me. How valuable things are that I thought nothing of, like vintage marbles.
Sorry, did you say marbles?
Marbles
with a B there, not marvel. Like
marbles,
the
like
ball.
Glass marbles, handmade marbles. There is a market for that kind of stuff, and they can be very valuable.
Oh my gosh!
So like, you know, something I would never think about.
No, I haven't. I thought you said marble. No.
Well, those too, you know, those are pretty valuable too. No, but I mean, I think to truly see stuff go to zero, you'd have to have some kind of mass exodus, which I think is very difficult just in concept alone.
Yes.
You know, you'd have to have literally zero people caring about vintage games, which is, I think that's kind of a tall task, you know, when retro games still have so much life. In terms of even just YouTube culture, speed running, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
There's new life in a lot of old video games.
And so. Even, I mean, we just saw Mario RPG get brought forward. I think that was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Between the release and now, you know, Mario RPG Remake coming out.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when we breathe new life into these games, Metroid Prime's another good one that's recent. Not as, you know, far back as Mario RPG, but... these games that people have this connection to, like you said, we need a mass exodus of everyone not caring.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I people who say it, I don't know if they understand what a crash ad would actually mean. Because I think you just have a lot of people who are maybe disgruntled about the current state or prices or what it is. And, you know, they say a comment like, oh, I can't wait for the crash or everything's going to crash to zero. No one's going to care about this stuff in 10 years. And it's like, then they're going to buy up, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it always is. Like, I hope stuff goes to zero because then I'm going to buy it all.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Well, that's totally counterintuitive, you know?
Exactly, though. There's no such thing as going to zero if people such as yourself are literally waiting to buy as soon as prices go down.
Exactly.
And the amount of people who are sitting there at any given time, especially right now, right? Like, the amount of people sitting there who, let's say... Tomorrow, everything just dropped by 50%. I don't know what happened. EMP went through. Prices just, they're all down, right? 50% off the board. People are going to buy immediately. There's going to be people, games people pick up, and we're going to see a natural ebb and flow take place again where it gets scooped up and prices slowly start to, you know, some games go up even more, some come down even more. That type of market is just going to ebb and flow itself back into existence.
Yeah.
Like an actual true crash. Is I would say impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Close to it anyway.
It would take so many ridiculous factors for that to happen. I mean, the thing about games too is there's a lot of organic collectability in it. You know, a lot of these things are naturally scarce They weren't valued when they first came out. They were not created as collectibles when they came out.
Best kind of collectible right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, especially Nintendo stuff. You know, I think the NES was kind of the start of the organic collectibility. I mean, obviously there is some Atari stuff and stuff before that. That's
it's much more niche. It has a lot to do with the brand strength. Like Atari's kind of a dead company.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Nintendo is so ridiculously strong as a company, and Sony for that matter. You know, I think if Nintendo suddenly went out of business, we would probably see a decline over, you know, let's say 20 to 40 to 50 years.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because, you know, we say video games, it's everything we're encompassing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a really bad way to look at retro gaming or video games in general.
Yeah,
because there are so many different pockets, systems, niches, all this stuff. So you mentioned Atari there. Yeah, most Atari stuff, I would say it's crashed. I would say Atari games have crashed.
Yeah.
They probably peaked out around, I don't know, the 90s, 2000s. And then we started seeing floods of new old stock. Like, I mean, you can buy still a lot of games to this day. Brand new, factory sealed for like $15.
Yeah.
Like Pole Position, Frogger. Like, there's a lot out there.
Yeah.
There's just new old stock out there.
Yeah.
Obviously, and I think, from the game crash and stuff. But
yeah, obviously, because stuff went so sideways back then.
Yeah.
You know, people were
sitting. They had a literal crash.
Yeah. People were sitting on ridiculous amounts of inventory for a long time. So, you know, there still exists a lot of stuff that has never seen a store shelf.
So I guess
not the case for Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. So in order for Atari to crash, what happened was literally over manufacturing to the nines.
Yeah.
Like they just printed into oblivion. It's like kind of currently what happened with Funko Pop stuff. There's a lot of stories of overprinting and Amazon dumps, like just literally throwing out brand new product because they printed way too much of it.
Yeah.
And that happens, you know, at a spot of like right now. Like that happens modern time because the Atari crash happened like modern time. The Beanie Babe crash happened like at the time due to printing and overprinting and like lack of consumer demand to keep up with the overprinting. When we talk about stuff like retro video games, it's already been printed.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's already has its natural dilution or natural attrition has taken place already.
Right.
We've destroyed copies. We have the amount of copies that exist are all we need, and there never will be any more. So in order for, you know, the stuff to crash, I don't ever see, like, people would just have to stop caring. Everyone would have to stop caring.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some consoles that have like tremendous weakness, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever crashed or if it just didn't ever do anything. But if you look at something like Sega Master System, like how many people are really pining for Sega Master System games now in 2023? It's a very niche collecting console. There's not a lot out there. It's still kind of hard to find and stuff, but like, you know, compared to Nintendo stuff, again, I don't know how strong Master System prices ever were to say if they like crashed, so to say.
Yeah.
But I think that is a dying collector console.
Right. And I think they also, they sort of suffer from visual lack as well.
You know, yeah,
the boxes
for sure.
Are very plain. They don't look great on a shelf. I mean, maybe some people.
That's Master System games?
Yeah, Master System. Yeah.
Yeah, even the cartridges don't look great, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think maybe some people that grew up with it probably have nostalgia for it. But I think as a collectible, they don't have the same eye appeal as like NES or SNES or those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's a tougher sell 100% when you don't have just like a good art. Like good art can sell something bad.
Yeah, well, that's your primary method of selling stuff back then, right?
Yep.
You had to make your boxes look amazing.
Which is actually crazy that Master System went with that like grid style with a little piece of art on some of them. Like some of them like don't even. It's just like the name of the game.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Why?
Or like a mail-in version of a game like having black and white art.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
This is the weirdest thing ever. I don't understand it.
And what a weird idea they went through. But consoles like that can definitely die, even if it doesn't crash. But like, collecting categories like that can certainly, and with the brand strength, how you're saying that Atari just doesn't really have brand strength anymore. Sega as well.
Yeah.
As much as it hurts to say, like, the actual strength of the Sega brand is bad.
Yeah, it's not as, definitely not as strong because they're not in the hardware game anymore. And I mean, I think Sega's properties are pretty strong, like Sonic, obviously, movies coming out.
Yeah, Sonic. It's movies. Funny. Like Sonic is probably the biggest it's been in what, 10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah,
it's doing pretty well. And in turn, factory sealed copies of Sonic 1, Sonic 2, they're pretty darn collectible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people pay hundreds, if not thousands, to acquire nice copies of those games.
Absolutely, yeah. Iconic, for sure.
So I guess that's a big thing, is if we go into the future, a retro video game crash, or what our price is going to do, it's kind of where will relevance maintain itself?
Mm.
Which is why I don't think it's a great way to look at it as all video games.
Right. Because it's too broad.
It's just, yeah, it's way too broad.
Yeah.
Because like you said, Sony's strength is way too good. Of course, people are going to care about Sony games in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
The next 20 years, 30 years. Of course they are. PS1 games aren't just going to disappear. Like, or become, you know, not liked, so to say.
Mm.
And same to go with NES games, N64, Super Nintendo. Are they going to be as, you know, like as we get older, right now I'm 30, you're a bit older than I am. 15 years, you know, I'll be mid-40s, you'll be almost 50. Oh, you will be 50. YouTube, dare I say.
Thank you for reminding me.
YouTube culture around retro gaming. What will YouTube culture look like when the people who grew up with this stuff, I mean, like, heck, Pat the NES Punk, he'll probably be 60 at that point. AVGN, right? Like, the nerd will probably be 60 in 15 years.
Yeah.
What does YouTube culture around retro gaming look like? Because I think there is a very strong correlation between what social media is doing, what YouTube's doing, TikTok, all these things. What the pulse is on those around the consoles that are really trendy or fun to collect for. So if all of our YouTubers and stuff become 50, 60 years old, if they're not making content anymore, that is something I could see having a big effect on the value of, say, NES, Super Nintendo, some of those older consoles.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think, especially now more than ever, it's so easy to interact with retro games, like even just through a Nintendo Switch and subscribing to their, you know, the Switch online service. Yeah. I mean, there's so many great retro games you can play easily. And I think with YouTube culture especially, it seems like so many games have new life, as I was saying before, with like speedrunning, Let's Plays as well, especially narrative games. Like, it's really interesting to me to see like 10-year-old narrative games being played by someone who'd never played it before.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a brand new experience.
Yeah, those are fun Let's Plays and stuff. Just to, like, watch someone else experience it for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of get to recapture your joy of, you know, consuming something for the first time. But, you know, I think especially from the NES era onward, a lot of those games hold up really well, especially like the classics. I mean, you don't think so?
NES has like 700 games on the system.
Yeah. Okay.
How many of those are actually good? How many do you want to sit down and play, I guess, is what I would say. Because, we can all be like, oh, Mario 3 is the best game ever made. Battletoads is so fun. But then, like, you know, for every Mario 3, you have 30 games that are, like, pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Well, you know, we could say that about movies or comics, too.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, for every great movie or comic, there's going to be a ton of crap out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a blanket statement, does NES hold up?
I mean, I think...
Maybe.
Maybe not... Maybe I kind of used the wrong words.
But if you're showing it to someone for the first time and you're like, oh, you're going to love NES, and say you don't have like the best 50 games, are they going to come back?
I don't know. For sure. I get that scenario for sure. I think like maybe more what I meant was it's like kind of the bare minimum for modern consumption.
Atari is awful and you know, NES is like playable.
It kind of is. That,
yeah, like, I know.
You know,
I say it as a bit of a joke, but like... Atari's not great.
No, I mean, you know, when I was a young kid, I remember going to my great aunt's for, was it Thanksgiving or something one year? And they had an Atari in the basement. Me and my cousin hooked it up and we had a blast. But, you know, we were like 10 years old at the time.
Yep.
But, you know, now as an adult going back and playing that, you're kind of like, eh.
You might have fun for a couple hours.
Yeah. But like, you know, now if I go back and play Mario or something, you know, I still have a great time.
Yeah, I agree. You know? The Atari was 100% novelty now.
Yeah.
Nothing more. It's just like to look back at how bad stuff was. And it's like, wow, that sucked. Like, thank God we don't have to do that again. You know, that's kind of how I experience Atari these days.
Mm-hmm.
But even with you saying, you know, people are going to get into it from Switch Online and stuff. These are digital era kids for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they play NES games. Why would they bother to ever collect or purchase them again? Like, you know what I mean? There's a big difference between someone talking about collectibles crashing, just playing a game or experiencing a game via Switch Online, digital means, whatever it is, watching Let's Plays, to the difference of them actually going out and purchasing an original cartridge or an original box or an original sealed copy, any of that stuff. Does that, where's the correlation there? Do you think that's actually going to happen, or does anyone care?
Yeah,
Well, are those kids going to care?
You know, I think a lot of us probably agree that collectors are really born. You know, certain people just have a mindset for going out and hunting for stuff that they like. You know, it doesn't really matter what it is. I think there's always going to be people like that. So, you know, there will kind of be those new specific kids that grow up with that kind of mindset that might venture into game collecting at some point just because they're of that mindset. You know, it might be comics or it might be something else or it might be stones that they find on the street or, you know, I used to collect rocks as a kid.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, so
bottle caps, rocks, yeah, absolutely. Shells.
Yeah, so I think there, you know, there's just some people that are always going to be born that are just of a collecting mindset. So, you know, it might not, I guess it really depends on the popularity of the segment at the
time. Do you believe then that Switch collecting is going to be like a highly touted collectible in 20 years? Like, is Switch going to be, you know, the next frickin'?
Probably not, because there's too much of it.
Oh, really?
But.
Interesting.
I think like.
Like, too much of it is in games are printed too many, or that there's simply too many games being printed?
I think there's too many games being hoarded. Probably.
Okay.
Like, people have the ability to go out and buy a factory box and just sit on it. You know, I think everything kind of boils down to supply and demand at the end of the day. And the reality is there's just a lot of supply of
Switch,
a lot of things.
Switch arguably might be the number one, like, Nintendo console ever.
Yeah.
Like people, like, it's great.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, it's, it has a lot of people who like it.
Yeah. I think it will definitely have value for sure. But I mean, I think Nintendo does a great job also of making their physical objects desirable.
Oh, yeah. You
know,
they do.
They don't really, you know.
There's no such thing as a sale.
No, you know, and Xbox doesn't really have that. Sony doesn't have that to the same degree. I don't think even these giant, you know, collector boxes that you can buy for a game, it's like,
it's man, not, no, let's
really,
get rid of those.
No one really cares.
Can we just kill those off already? Like, yeah. I don't need a 4-foot statue of Kratos in my God of War 3.
Yeah,
I just don't.
Exactly.
I don't need it. What am I doing with this?
Yeah.
Give me a steel book and like a little art book and I'm like, that's all I need.
Yeah.
One of those cells. Remember that you always used to get like a lithogram or a cell or whatever? Yeah. Yeah, lithograph. Yeah. 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 It'd be like 1 of 10,000 and you're like, oh,
that's so cool.
Yeah.
I'm special. Yeah. No one else has this.
Yeah, completely worthless, but that was all I needed. I don't need these statues and 299 for some of them. It's just insane.
Yeah.
But it's interesting too with the Switch collecting, right? You talk about people hoarding or too many games printed and stuff. So then in the future, like there's the LRG,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people have pivoted to the more, I guess, investable side or collector side of modern collecting being these limited prints, super rare games, LRGs, limited to 1000, 2500, all those. Would you be more inclined then to go down that route with the Nintendo Switch?
You know, part of me is like, anything that's made to be collectible from the get-go is probably a no-go at any time. So I think in the future, if I had to like put my finger on something and kind of predict what might happen, I think we might see random one-off Switch games become more valuable than maybe more standard ones. You know, ones that people haven't hoarded that there's low populations of.
But not necessarily an LRG? Or those as well?
I don't know. It's that's really tough to say because I think people buy those just to keep them sealed too.
Me too.
So, you know, I think there has to be a lot of people actively participating for that to go anywhere.
Yeah, I think that's the number one issue with those LRGs. Like you said, if it's marketed as a collectible, the entire existing population doesn't go through natural attrition in anything.
No, it's not organic.
2,500 right? copies are printed. 2,500 copies are kept. They're like 80% will probably be kept sealed. Like they're going to be locked away.
That's
like
a high population.
Yeah, people treat them as investable collectibles.
Yeah.
Which destroys the whole idea of an investable collectible or organic, you know, scarcity, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. It's a high population. Once you start talking about factory sealed mint copies, if even 50% of 2,500 survives, that's 1,250 copies.
Yeah.
Video game collecting as it stands, like that's a lot of population.
Yeah.
On any game, even factory sealed.
Yeah. I think where you kind of see the split a little bit will be in the very upper grades of popular games.
Well, that's at least something where you can, you know, throw an extra qualifier.
Yeah, like a WOTA 10, you know, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
You know, first print.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think yeah, that's probably one right now, or the a handful exists right now.
Yeah, like that's, you know, if I was going to put my finger on something, it'd probably be something like that.
It's funny because then those games too exist right now, but people are playing multiple thousands of them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh man, I don't know if I want to pay that much. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'd love to own one, but
will
like,
that really be good long term?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It feels like we're already paying the 2030 price in 2023 when I see, like, you know, Mario Odyssey first print sell for $3,000.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know. Feels like we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, I think so. But I think, you know, if you had to really to choose something, it'd probably be, if Switch is going to be collectible at the end of the day in 20 years, probably is the upper grades of popular titles.
Just buy your Marios and Zeldas as mint as you can find them.
Exactly.
It's paid off for every other console.
Yeah, that's right.
it's been the play.
Yeah, because that's where you're going to see low populations, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to get a really high grade even in modern stuff. Stuff right out of the factory case is not going to be a 10.
Exactly, though. It just is. I think someone submitted a factory case of Mario Wonder, they were saying, when I was live the other day. So 24 copies they sent into CGC for grading.
Yeah.
They got 4 10s.
Really?
So that's a factory case, brand new copies, Mario Wonder, just printed, 4 out of 24 hit. I think that's a great case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a high hit rate. I don't know if that will sustain, but just an idea of, you know, what modern actually looks like if you submit a factory case.
Yeah.
You might get 4 perfect copies.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty good return at the end of the day.
It is. It's great.
Yeah.
Sell off a couple of them and, you know, go from there. But so many people think you can just buy a single copy, submit it, and like, boom, you have your perfect. Like,
yeah, not going to happen.
No shot. No, you won't do it.
Even if that's like touch someone's hands, you know.
Exactly.
have to like look at it. And
we can call it artificial rarity. We can call it whatever you want. But if, you know, if you're someone who wants that 10, you won't get it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But bringing it back then to the digital era, just people growing up on Nintendo Switch now, digital. Why would, like, are those people still going to want physical games? I guess, what makes someone go backwards? So, you know, like, you grew up with Switch, maybe you buy some Switch games, you're nostalgic for it. What like, brings them back to NES games or Super Nintendo games? The vast majority of which they will have never played, experienced, will never, you know what I mean? There's 700 NES games, 600 Super Nintendo, like, the vast majority of games outside of your Mario, Zeldas, whatever, they'll never have heard of or anything. What brings someone backwards? Because if they do, if we just continue and no new people, you know, go backwards, yeah, those prices will just die. Those consoles will die.
Yeah.
People will eventually sell off and no one else will buy.
Yeah, true. I think, you know, a lot of it is kind of the ease of exposure. I mean, we kind of touched on this earlier, but, you know, just having the option to play retro games through Nintendo Switch's online service, I think is great for kids to kind of experience. You know, like, I have friends who say, like, oh, I just played through Zelda NES with my, you know, 7-year-old daughter and we had a great time. You know, that's a prime exposure for a kid at that age.
When you did comics,
yeah,
did you rotate backwards? Like, what made you
go back? I went for the 60s,
earlier comics,
the Silver Age Spider-Mans.
So how'd you get into those? Like, what was the, you know, your mindset, I guess?
I think it's, you know, it's still kind of how I collect games today. It's primarily art motivated.
Really?
I love the covers. I never really read that many comics.
Really?
I watched the Spider-Man cartoon in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Yeah, me too. Fantastic.
Yeah, and I, you know, I saw those brilliant colored Silver Age Spider-Mans at the comic shop, and I was like, wow, those are cool. And of course, I was of the collector's mindset, so that's kind of how I got into it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was from an art perspective. And that's why, you know, I bought a lot of SNES games I had no connection with because I just love the box cover.
Huh. So on that, if someone, you know, is a video game collector, even if they don't necessarily play, you think that people could go backwards just based on, you know, how cool it is to, the coolness of owning old video games.
Yeah, I think it does have a life of its own, for sure. A lot of those boxes are super attractive.
They are.
You know,
they are.
They have great artwork on them. Don't necessarily have to have a connection to buy something. You know, if you're of the mindset that you want to have some cool stuff on your shelf, you're going to gravitate towards what appeals to you. And I think all it takes is kind of that first little dip into it, you know, to kind of get absorbed into something.
And it's kind of interesting. As we see games disappear, like we're going to go into, you know, the digital age, I wonder if there's going to be a stronger pull to nostalgia, to old, to having something physical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, you know, say in 5-10 years, no physical games being printed. Just like, maybe, you know, there's still going to be some companies, LRG, whatever, going to be putting out limited prints.
Yeah.
But let's say, you know, for the vast majority, nothing. I wonder if people are going to get this strong pull then for physical. if we're going to see an actual bump in the next 15 years or so towards people wanting to, like, you know, not as interested in modern gaming anymore, but rather going backwards to something where you can have something tangible. You can have a game night still. You can sit down with people, like, you know, put the pop the game in and do all that. Especially as, like, I don't, like, not that people phase out of gaming, but I think as you get older, you stop keeping up with everything as much because you just can't.
Well, there's just too much now.
Yeah, yeah. So
there's so much more stuff now than there was before.
Exactly. Know? Like, choice fatigue is absolutely real in gaming now. Yeah. Modern gaming, just there are too many games. I was just thinking about this the other day.
Netflix list. You know? Yeah, I haven't watched, you know, I haven't watched 75% of what's on there, but I keep adding to it.
Exactly. So God knows we all have enough games to play to last us a lifetime. And I actually wonder if as we get to there, where the connection to the actual media starts lessening and lessening, people will go back to wanting an actual strong connection to the thing they're holding, they're playing, and just keep cycling. Not even cycling, like new games. There's, you know, a whole Xbox 360 library that I have not played.
Yeah.
Most PS3 games I have not played.
Right.
And like, those are prime titles. You talk about NES holding up, like PS3 and 360, like they're great. They're fantastic. They essentially are, I don't want to say they're as good as modern games, but like, it's damn close.
Yeah.
They're running the same, like, you know, we, by that generation, it was a here. Like, this is what gaming looks like.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. I don't think we can ever discount the importance of tangible interaction with things.
Yeah. So many people emphasize that so much.
Yeah. Because, you know, there was a large movement where, you know, people saying, oh, like, you know, comic books are going to disappear. They're going to be all digital.
Yep.
Even regular books. There's going to be no bookstores anymore. You know, books are going to disappear. It's all going to be digital. But, you know, there still is, you just can't replicate that with a digital device, that feeling of flipping through a comic book or a regular book or, you know, even, I don't know, holding a box in your hand or something. Or,
well, I mean, like I said, a lot of people really talk about the like the act of taking a game disc, popping it in, like, you know, mm-hmm. closing the lid on a PlayStation or what it is, hitting power on a Super Nintendo. Like, that's, those are strong drivers for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm an emulation guy, but like, you know, like, some people just swear by it.
But even with emulation, you're still interacting with it. You know, you're physically interacting with the game and playing it. It doesn't really matter how you pop it in. But I think just the fact that you're actually interacting with something makes it a bit different than, you know, something like movies or TV.
I agree with that.
You know, there's
Broly.
There's not a lot of organic.
I was wondering where you're going with it there. I was like, you don't really interact with anything. Like, what do you?
Yeah.
Well, no, I get what you're saying against movies.
Yeah, like, you know, movies disappearing from store shelves. It's like, okay, but you know, you don't interact with them. You sit back and you watch them. They're just, it's like a painting, you know.
Yeah,
just,
I don't even consider buying movies anymore. I haven't for years.
Yeah,
doesn't even cross my mind.
I haven't bought a disc in a long time.
And it's weird. I don't even have the desire to collect old media. Like, you know, we're talking about, like, can it crash and stuff? Like, with movies, I don't feel any, like, oh my God, now they're gone. I should go and, like, buy ones I love.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Well, if given the choice between watching Back to the Future on a VHS versus a Blu-ray, it's like, what are you going to choose?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But even owning the VHS for, like, a physical token of my appreciation for Back to the Future, like, I don't know. I have no drive whatsoever.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just not my collecting category, but, like, it just doesn't, I don't know. I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is how I feel.
I think your memory of that movie is not going to be popping in the VHS tape. It's going to be, you know, seeing it in theater or, you know, watching it on TV or something like that. Whereas games, it's like you from a fundamental standpoint, you have to interact with them. Whether you take them out of the box, put them in the console, turn it on, or even just play it with a controller, you're interacting with it. So I think that helps things a lot, you know, which is why I think, like, maybe in the future, if anything, you'll see Microsoft and Sony move digital. But I have a feeling that Nintendo will
never get rid of the
or take a very long time to do it by comparison.
Yeah,
because they do so well in marketing and hyping their physical product that I just, you know, it's not the same for Sony and Microsoft.
I actually, like, now that you say that, I think you're absolutely correct. That Nintendo will not go away from either cartridges, discs, whatever.
Yeah.
That they will run something physical.
Yeah.
Because I think they really pride themselves in, like, connect with that tangibility aspect.
Yeah. And they treat it as if they're a toy company.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that's what I was going to say.
You know, it's fun having these little carts in a case. You know, all your games stored in this tiny little thing. It's like, you know, there is something to that. Whereas it's, you know, it's kind of different with the disc.
I don't know. Well, even how Xbox went the Kinect route in that generation, and like, you know, Nintendo didn't. Like, they always wanted you to have a controller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they never got rid of that.
Yeah.
That was how it worked.
Yeah.
And they never even, I don't think, tried to do a controllerless motion anything.
No, they didn't. They're just, well, I mean, besides, you know, Wii kind of experimenting with motion controls, but, you know, they always wanted you to have something to interact with. It's not just.
Yeah, it wasn't just like, you know, actual hands-free experience.
Yeah.
They never went that route.
Yeah.
Maybe they just couldn't, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, technology at the time.
So Kinect limited. Was really cool for what it was.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like at the time, Kinect was neat. We played on that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
That was good. That's good tech. Cool. They even included it with the Xbox One until they found out, like, no one cares.
Like, well, that's dead.
Yeah, literally, though. You know, pretty sure our model, like, included a sensor and stuff on the Xbox One, and it's like...
Yeah.
You know, for the 60 games or whatever they released for it.
Yeah.
That's a library we need to collect. The full Kinect collection.
Kinect games. That's something someone will care about.
The next category.
Yeah, those are overlooked.
Yeah, the secret gems.
Yeah.
Get in now on the ground floor.
Yeah. I remember when Google Stadia was kind of becoming big and people were talking about it a lot. I had a friend who was like, oh, this is the future of gaming. You know, everyone's going to be doing this type of thing. And I was just like, man... You know, I can't even get my internet to stay on the whole day, you know.
How is this
going to be the next thing?
Exactly. Yeah. And depending on what happens with that, like, I mean, that is also where older video games is always going to stay. There's always going to be a spot for that.
Yeah.
Be it, you know, hangouts with friends, be it whatever, where you don't need internet. You just need the game console, and you.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's a lot simpler. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always going to resonate with certain people. It's like how, like, vinyl is having a resurgence. You know, I feel like vinyl is as popular as it's been in 10 years, with everyone either owning one, or buying it, or, like, they like, print new ones.
Yeah.
Every art, Taylor Swift has, like, a whole vinyl collection. Get them all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Yeah, and there's a game community that collects just video game vinyl. Yeah,
well, there you go, right?
Yeah.
So, to the fact of, like, video games, will they ever crash? I mean... People collect outdated stuff all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Then it becomes trendy to buy the old stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So for the next wave of 20-somethings, it might be like, oh, the N64 is so cool. Like, maybe you don't buy a physical console anymore, though, right? Maybe they put out, like, an N64 mini that actually has a cartridge slot.
Right.
And that's what, like, people do. So you just collect games and stuff that way. Or, you know, like, whatever it is. But I just don't see, with how strong these companies are, that it will ever go away completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a retro market crash doesn't make sense. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. That's an entire segment of the biggest entertainment medium in the entire world, you know, going to zero, which is like kind of unfathomable a little bit.
Especially with tangible goods, there's no such thing as zero.
Yeah.
There's always going to be someone who will pay you for a Mario 64 cartridge.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, $10, $20, $30. Hey, it's funny because the price of a lot of that stuff hasn't moved in the past like 15 years. I think I was looking at price charts not long ago in like 2012, Mario 64 was around $19. Now it's $30. Like, it hasn't really done anything, but the point is, like, you know, if people want it. It's still desirable.
Yeah, it holds up really well.
Yeah.
It's still incredibly fun to play.
You can go through ebbs and spikes and stuff with these prices, but, like, you know, say in another 15 years, it's back down to $15. Like, okay, that's what it cost 25 years ago. Like, it's... I don't know. Crash is just such a sexy word. It's like this, like, embellished thing that, you know, graded video games crash. That's what it looks like. 2 years, you're going to lose 80% of your value. That's just never going to happen with regular games. It'll never happen.
Yeah.
People can hope for it and want for it all you want. Like, there's no such thing as a bubble pop on your average game. Because it's just not a bubble. It's just organic. Like, it's, you know?
Yeah.
There's too many people
that
want this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as long as you have the desirability, you know, it's gonna take a lot for games themselves to just go to nothing.
Just any random title to drop 80% in the next 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about, like, Crash in relation to 2020 versus now?
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, like I said, that's
like,
kind of...
Do you still define it as Crash, or...
If in the graded segment, sealed segment, I would.
Okay.
For sure. Some of the losses are insane.
Yeah.
I mean, Carl Jobs put up that video recently, which detailed some of the, like, absolute worst.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a 2 year span, the exact same game is going from, say, 200,000 down to 33,000. Still in a tremendous amount of money, 33K for a video game, but, like, that is a loss that is unfathomable.
Right.
So if we take that kind of, because that's the, you have to define a timeline for a crash too.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing is if we just say, oh, video games are going to crash in 20 years, 2 years, 5 years, like what are we doing with it? You know what I mean? So in defining a 2020, 2021 to the next 2 years, 2022 to 2024, like that, there was a crash there for sure. Mm-hmm. Past 2 years, there has been a crash. Are games crashing right now? No.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you start defining your time spans there.
Yeah.
As of this very moment, graded games aren't crashing. Most of the damage was felt in the past year and a half.
Right.
So it's interesting in that respect, but I would absolutely call that a crash. And that went with the macro economy in a lot of ways, where we saw, I don't know, is there anything that didn't lose
50% absolutely. It's value? Not, it's not an isolated event for sure.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that's what a lot of people who really don't know any better kind of dump on games for that.
Yes,
because it was
there's a lack of context.
Yeah, it was the new kid on the block in terms of, you know, publicity.
Yep.
So
that was the dramatic story about WADA with Heritage. Oh my God! Like,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, it became this isolated incident.
Yeah.
That only games went up in value, and then only games went down,
which was completely untrue.
Yeah, yeah. So anything you could have bought in that past 2 year span has probably gone down 30 to 80%.
Yeah.
Be it crypto, stocks.
Yeah.
I mean, now, right, we're seeing some recovery in tech sector and stuff, but like Facebook went from 330 down to like 150.
Yeah.
Like it didn't, like a Tesla crashed, Bitcoin crashed. Like, yeah. Take your pick.
Yeah.
You know, take your pick. Harry Potter cards went up and down in that time span.
Yeah.
Who was manipulating Harry Potter cards out there?
Yeah.
It just didn't matter. Didn't matter what it was.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, if you were someone who started collecting in late 2019 or 2020, and, you know, you would have very much felt that. I think if you started collecting before that and kind of wrote it out, you're seeing more like a return to normalcy.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, a crazy crash, unless you actively bought stuff at highs.
Which, I mean, we all did. You know? We all did, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people did.
Yeah. But if you're in this market, you bought something that is now dropped in value tremendously.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. It just matters if it's hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or hundreds of thousands.
And it's not even, you know, I don't even want to call it like a video game market crash because it was just so universal.
It's an economic crash.
It was an economic crash, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's how it should actually be defined. Like, it's an economic crash that took place.
Yeah.
As we now, you know, recession talk is still all we have for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Like, we just went through an economic crisis. Well, we might still be going into an economic crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we might be getting worse from here, which
next
is crazy.
Next year might be really bad for the housing market.
Yes.
As mortgage renewals come up.
Yes.
And these new interest rates.
Like, Canada's already cycling through that. My brother had to renew his, and my friend as well. And I think they jumped from 2% up to 6%.
Yeah. You know what? That would have been me if I would have, if I wouldn't have sold my house a few years ago. I would have been renewing from 2-something to, you know, 6 or whatever.
And it's insane. That's like an extra $500 I think they're paying now on their mortgage per month.
Yeah, makes it completely, like, unaffordable.
It's literally, that's the type of stuff that, like, suddenly you can't afford your home.
Yeah.
So,
which will not be very good for the overall housing economy.
Yes. So going into this, it's like, you know, yeah, everything was completely overpriced, almost everything, but money was free.
Yeah.
We were in a time
you
where
you could borrow at 1-2%.
Yeah. You know, borrow almost zero.
Yeah.
For a lot of stuff. Yeah. Or like, you know, credit cards at 0% for 24 months.
Yeah.
For almost anything.
Yeah.
Like,
ridiculous.
Yeah. It's hard to explain if you didn't, I don't know. Some people just, you need the context. You need that wider scope context to actually understand what's going on with video games, why they shot up. A lot of people just see it and it's like money laundering.
Yeah. No.
And, oh my gosh.
By no means an isolated incident, you know.
It's crazy though.
Yeah.
So for a wider crash, even in that time, it's interesting because graded went up tremendously and then came down tremendously. But if you look at the actual CIB and cartridge pricing, it's much more of a, you know, they went up, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Like cartridges and CIBs, they went up. And now the come down, though, even from that same time span, I wouldn't call it a crash because it's so gradual.
Right.
You know, something might be down 20 or 30% now. Like, say a complete in-box copy of, I don't know, Mario Kart, Super Nintendo or something. Probably down 20, 30% from the high. Cartridges, you know, coming down 20, 30%. Is it a crash? No. Like, I wouldn't call it one. It's a very gradual decline after having a sharp increase.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe my definition of crash doesn't fit, but.
Yeah, I almost visualize, like, if I'm looking at a graph or something, I visualize it as more of a gradual increase and then a sudden drop.
Yeah, that's how I see a crash.
But what we really had was a sharp increase, you know, just vertical craziness. And, you know, it's like, how is that sustainable?
Yeah, of course. Like, of course it's not.
Yeah, of course. So it's like, it's just kind of, it's an event of the times for everything.
Like the black swan, right? Is that the crazy thing, the black swan event?
Yeah, it was a combination of so many factors, of money being so cheap to borrow, people having time to do things, you being out of work, at home doing nothing, you know?
Yeah, the normal market was just interest. Just like interest. People were interested in games.
Yeah.
People came into the market.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we're talking about cartridges, CIBs, again, a lot of people like correlate like, oh, sealed went up so much, so that means that my CIBs went up that much. But like, just no. I don't know how to like really, you know, like frankly, bluntly, no. That's just not how the effects took place.
Yeah, the populations are very different between the two.
Yeah, and the markets are almost completely separate.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I do think a rising tide floats all boats to some degree, but probably not to the degree that they're thinking.
I will say that if we're talking about complete inbox cardboard Marios, Zeldas, Pokemons, I will like attribute the most popular franchises in cardboard games, those were affected.
Yeah.
I will 100% concede that. Higher grade copies mostly.
Yeah.
But if we talk like, you know, almost anything disc-based, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, Final Fantasy VII sold for 144,000. 144,000. A CIB was $50.
Right.
Like, yeah. CIB didn't move.
Yeah.
You know, Tomb Raider, $100,000 game. CIB is worthless. Spyro, worthless. Crash, worthless.
Yeah.
Like, those, like, you know, it had to be cardboard-based collectibles that are already, like, condition-sensitive and hard to get. Which, like, a CIB copy of Mario 64. Yeah, that's difficult. But guess what? The cartridge didn't move. $1.5 million sale. No one cares. That doesn't affect the cartridge. So,
yeah,
the spillover effects exist to a degree, but just the amount of interest that entered the hobby from free money, from people at home, from people just naturally wanting to be here. And that's why now we're seeing it, I think, fall 20-30% as people sell out, as people have their lives back, if people have options back. You don't need to own this stuff. And then prices will come down another 20% next year. Might still be a good time to wait. And then we'll see natural ebb and flow again.
Yeah.
And overall, if you zoom out the graph from there, you're going to see a very steady incline in prices for the most part. But it's on top of that steady incline, you're going to see a sharp up and a very gradual down to a normal rate of growth in the hobby.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, being in kind of the art segment, I saw a lot of sentiment with regards to game pricing and art pricing.
Oh, really?
Whereas like a lot of art collectors were not at all interested in selling anything. Because it's like, you know, if I sell this painting for $50,000, you know, what kind of game of comparable historical value can I buy for that?
So you're saying games moved way too fast compared to art, or like way too high?
It just made the sale of art look much less appealing by comparison.
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
Yeah, it didn't make sense from a monetary perspective.
Okay.
Because it's like, what are you going to replace it with?
Yep.
Art, it's usually like you can't really replace it with anything because it's all one of a kind, right? So it's like when a game costs 20 to 50 grand, it's like, why would I sell a Nintendo cover in that amount? What am I going to buy?
You're going to buy a copy of Spyro or something on PS1. That's like $23,000 at the time.
I know. It's like, why? Like, why would I do that?
Is that Tomb Raider, man? 144K. Like, it's the first appearance of Lara Croft.
Like, it makes no sense to me as an art collector. Like, why would I sell something for that amount to be able to buy something like that? It just makes no sense.
Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah.
To say the
very
least.
Very weird time for sure.
Very weird. And now that, everything's coming down, it's like, hey, now at least you can sell, you know, less expensive stuff to buy other less expensive stuff, and it feels better.
Yeah.
It just does.
It's just more normal.
Yeah, exactly, right? It just feels better.
Yeah. Well, I think we've kind of covered everything.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Video games aren't crashing. I think that's the point. So if you're holding out another 20 years hoping for that crash, just, you know, if you want a game price to go down 20-30%, like say you want to save $20 or something, I mean, if it's going to take 5 years for that to happen, just buy the game. Like, dare I say,
just do it.
Yeah, just do it, because waiting for a crash, it just probably be disappointed.
Yeah,
enjoy your game, buy your game, you know, if you end up hating it, just sell it again.
Yeah,
but that'll do it. Join us next time, Weekend Rental Podcast. Bye.